got some more good news to announce here. Nialeese has a baby brother, okay? Lynn Matthew Olivio was born February 15th. He came in at 7 pounds, 6 ounces, and 20 inches long. And we want to tell Nialeese congratulations. So excited for her. And mom is doing fine. She didn't write that, but I am assuming I would have heard that mom, if she wasn't. So we're so happy for Elizabeth, little Liam, and Nialeese now having a baby brother. That's awesome. Deb and I had a blast in South Carolina. We did a marriage retreat for the church in Columbia, South Carolina, and the church in Savannah, Georgia. They met at Hilton Head, South Carolina, which is not a bad place to have a marriage retreat. Great facility. We got to see friends that we have known for 40 years. Tom and Lisa Cates were there. Tom serves as one of the elders for the Indianapolis church. He and Lisa became disciples when Deb and I were leading a campus ministry at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. And that was back, they were converted in like 1982. So that was quite a while. And just seeing them as an elder and what he's doing, got to see some other people from New York church, Takashi and Karen Tagawa. I did their wedding in Canada. Takashi was converted here in New York. Karen was converted in Toronto. And it was great to see them, been disciples for 30 years about. Just an encouraging time, seeing so many people. You know, Deb and I had moved up here from Columbia, South Carolina, so I was preaching for the church there and seeing a lot of those people. That was 30 years ago, that are still there, faithful, growing strong. So it's one of those times, you know, we went down to do something, you know, you can call it work, do a marriage retreat, but man, it was a kiss from God. And then, of course, got to see Britt and John and Huck and Wyatt, which was a double kiss from God, man. What a blast. So I came back super encouraged and excited and can't wait to have my wife back, okay? I'm getting the house cleaned up. She's going to be so impressed. Things get a little loose when she's out of town, you know? There's some times I don't even worry. I don't sleep under the covers. I just grab a blanket, sleep on top so I don't have to make the bed. You know, I just smooth out the wrinkles. I mean, there's things like that that I like to do. I get to eat pretty much anything I want. You know, I mean, it's great. So life is getting back a little more adult, shall we say, in anticipation. But I tell you, we've been married this year. It'll be 40 years. I don't like being apart from her. I just don't like it. It feels weird. It just feels weird. So I need the weirdness to leave. So pray that that plane comes early, okay? Anyway, let's start out in Revelation chapter 1. It is so good to see all of you. We missed you guys. A lot of bad stuff in the newspaper. In fact, I'm not sure I can ever say that there's a day when there isn't something bad in the newspaper. And I don't say that in a negative or denigrating way about media. I'm just saying that's life. And there are things that happen on individual levels. There are things that happen on community levels. You know, we see something like the Florida shootings, and we just go, again? What, you know, please, no. But meanwhile, week after week in cities, there are individuals that are getting shot. The pain in families just keeps on going. There are diseases that are happening. There are challenges, economic challenges. And, you know, you pick up the paper, and it is true. It's like good news is really not news. Sad, but that's it. It's the bad stuff, and it arrests our attention, but it also makes us feel vulnerable. Because we are vulnerable in a fallen world in a certain sense. Not in reality, though. And I want us to think about that. In Revelation chapter 1, the Apostle John has given his life to spreading the gospel of Jesus. He has gone everywhere, and now he's banished for it. In fact, at this time, he is the last of the original apostles, still alive. The rest of them, except for Judas, we know what happened to him, but the rest of them have been martyred. And it wasn't gentle deaths they went to. They all went to a bloody end. But the gospel spread throughout the Roman Empire. Spread so much that now Domitian has got to crush it. You know, before when Nero, the Emperor Nero, it was only more in the vicinity of Rome, he persecuted it. But now Domitian is going after Christians from one end of the empire to the other. And so John, as far as news he gets, what he gets is, wow, he's torturing these people. These people are going to the arena. These are happening. These churches are under all this pressure. It's stuff that you and I can't even conceive of. Because we live in a place that I can say things and no one's going to do something about it. The government. Yet, I get. I guess. But this is what they were going through. Families were losing their husbands, their wives, their dads, their mom, their children for the faith. And John's not shocked. He saw Jesus get crucified. He knew. Jesus said, hey, things are in the world, you will have trouble. But in me, you will have peace. I've overcome the world. So John learned how to look at things from an eternal perspective, but still the vulnerability. Look what's happening. It's all bad news. And John's alone on the Isle of Patmos, but then his loneliness is divinely interrupted. Jesus comes to visit. And there in Revelation 1, John is writing about Jesus, and he's about to talk about him coming and visiting him and giving this revelation of Jesus Christ. A revelation just to say, doesn't matter how bad things may seem on the world, from God's point of view, he's won. And anyone who belongs to him has won. And this is just temporary, and there's going to be a renewal, a new heaven and a new earth. The old's going to be gone. And the only reason I hadn't started now is God is patient, allowing as many people to be redeemed as can. But at some point, that's it. It's over. That's it. And so John writes this, verse 7 of chapter 1. Look, he is coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him, even those who pierced him. And all the peoples of the earth will mourn because of him. So shall it be. Amen. I am the Alpha and the Omega, says the Lord God, who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty. And then in verse 17, when John sees this vision of Jesus, when I saw him, I fell at his feet, though dead. Then he placed his right hand on me and said, do not be afraid. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I was dead, and behold, I am alive forever and ever, and I hold the keys of death and Hades. You see, what John needed was a new perspective. What John needed to be reassured of is his view of reality was not complete. There is a greater reality that swallows up our reality. You know, I had surgery last year on my spine. There was a synovial cyst that had grown, that filled up with fluid and was pushing in on my spine. And one night, I had to wake Deb up like this, saying, I can't move. It was just searing pain anywhere I go, and I just, you know. And so I went to a doctor that specialized that, and he goes, I'll tell you what, we will get that aspirated. We'll stick a needle in there. We'll just drain it. And that'll take the pressure off. And I said, good deal. I'm all for that, you know, whatever. And so I set up the appointment. Then I went to my primary for my physical. And I was telling her about it. Yeah, I've got the synovial cyst. I could move and all that, but I have an appointment to have it aspirated. She goes, oh, no, 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 no. I go, what do you mean? She goes, oh, no, no. You see, that cyst is like a balloon. So what'll happen, they'll take the fluid out, but pretty soon it's going to fill back up over time, right? And do that. You need to go in there and have that part surgically removed. And I'm going, really? And so I made an appointment with a surgeon. And I talked to him, and he goes, well, she was right. It will just fill up. So you need to get it done. So he did that. Hey, man, I can dance and jump. I'm doing great. All right? It was awesome. But you know something? My primary is amazing. She is incredible. I trust her completely. You know why? She is competent. And that's why I trust her. I don't just go there, well, you say you're a doctor, so therefore that must mean you're good. Doesn't mean a thing. Someone has got to demonstrate competence. And I trusted myself to her. Why? Just because she's a nice person or because I'm a nice person? I trusted myself to her because of her competence. I didn't understand everything, but I said, you understand it. Your view of reality is more accurate than my view of reality. Because of your competence, I will entrust myself to this direction. Jesus is the first and the last. He is the beginning and the end. He experienced death. He was raised again. His view of reality is so much greater than your view or my view. What he sees and what he understands is beyond what we're able to. We are limited. How did we get to the point that we can't read a newspaper because of all the bad that's happening? Where did all this bad come from? Well, go back to Genesis 3. The original temptation was, if you eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you will be like God. It wasn't just the eating. It wasn't that. It was the fact they would be able to call their own shots in their life. I will be like God. I will decide what is good for me and what is bad for me. And you know what? That may be different than what's good for Leslie and bad for Leslie. Well, what if I think something's good for me and maybe she thinks it's bad? I don't care. I'm going to do what's good for me. There's the seed of crime. There's a seed of racism. There's a seed of bigotry, of arrogance, of rage, of all of this thing. That's where the seed is. I think this is good. I call the shots in my life, and I'll do that. And so we read the newspaper and see it in all of its inglorious forms. And we go, what in the world can we do about this? Enter Jesus. All along, God's been encouraging us. God has been calling us. God has been telling us through the prophets, through His Word, that there is a bigger picture of reality. That there's something greater going on, that, you know what, we're limited in our understanding. So we've got to trust His competence. And Jesus enters the world. And what does He say? I want you to have a blessed life. I want us to look at Matthew chapter 5, and I want us to read what we call the Beatitudes. And in here, he'll start talking about blessed are. And the word there is not kind of the way we use blessed today. Oh, bless your heart. Oh, you're blessed if something good happens to you. No, what the word means, it means fullness. It means wholeness. It means everything you were designed to be as a human being, created in the image of God, to experience fullness, to experience wholeness of life. Blessed is this person. That is what Jesus is saying. So he's entering life. He's entering it with all of the crime, the disease, the fallenness of this creation created by sin. It started when man thought, I'll call my own shots. And so you have repression. You have all these things going on. And Jesus comes in, and this is what he says. In verse 1 of Matthew 5, "Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed, fullness, wholeness are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you.'" Fullness, wholeness, the perfect humanity. He's coming in and he's saying, you are blessed if this is the experience. He's saying this because he's looking at us and human life from an entirely different perspective, an eternal perspective, an all-knowing perspective, whereas you and I can only look at it from our perspective. We need somebody to come and show us how to be full, how to be whole, how to be healed. We needed that, and Jesus came to do that. Think about it as a parent. You know, I can remember my parents trying to get me to eat vegetables. I didn't want to eat vegetables. To me, the breakfast of champions was pizza and Krispy Kreme donuts, man. I could do that four or five times a day. And I would be happy. And you know why? It tastes good! That's why. But then it's like they want to feed me broccoli and spinach and squash. You know, it's like some of this stuff, you feel like it'd gag a maggot. You know what I mean? It's like, But why? Is it that they were sitting there and talking to each other, say, you know what, let's really torture the kid. I know he loves these things, but watch this, you know? Watch this. Here's a little pizza, broccoli. You got to eat the broccoli first. Oh, we love that. We love to see him squirm. No, they didn't do that. They just knew, even though I didn't know, you know, this stuff, Mom, Dad, it tastes like garbage. I don't want that. I want pizza. I want Dunkin' Donuts. I want cookies. See, my reality is it's all about taste. That's my reality as a child. It's all about taste. A parent's reality is, yep, I want you to have some things that taste good, but then there's some things I don't really care if it tastes good or not, because I'm looking from a whole different perspective. I see the diseases, I see the vitamin deficiencies, I see all of the consequences that will happen. I see you growing strong and powerful and being everything you can be if you eat this junk here, you know, this broccoli, this spinach. See, that's the parent's reality coming in. And as a child, I didn't understand it. I fought against it. I railed against it. But I grew up, and I was able to participate in athletics. I was able to run. I was able to do a lot of different things. You know why? Broccoli, spinach, squash. And I think pizza and Dunkin' Donuts had a little something to do with it in there, but my bones, my muscles, everything got what reality said they needed. Why is it that we resist God so much? You know why it is? We go back to Genesis 3. We still think we know what's best. We still think that our limited perspective is reality, rather than looking at Jesus and saying, he entered my life, human life, and said, this is real. Now, we betray ourselves sometimes, because we'll read the scriptures and we'll go, that's awesome, it's amazing. But in real life, now, what we say when we do that is, in reality, the real reality is, This is a nice little Hallmark card thing. But you can't really do it. But Jesus sees something beyond what we see. He's an eternal perspective, so he calls us to do this. So we look at these Beatitudes. What do they mean? Well, it's interesting. There are two schools of thought that I'm aware of. There may be even more, but that's okay. I love that. On how to approach the Beatitudes. How do we live the blessed life? Because that's something we all want to do. What is the good life? That's something even Greek and Roman philosophers used to pursue. What is the good life? Well, Jesus says, here's the good life. Here's the full life. And he starts going through this. And there are kind of two schools of thought that come. How do you read the Beatitudes here? One school of thought, if you ever read The Kingdom of God by Tom Jones and Steve Brown, awesome. Volume 2 is an exposition on the Sermon on the Mount. Amazing. It's really awesome. And they come at it from the point of view that this is the pathway to how to live in the kingdom. You know, poor in spirit, mourn, you go through this. And they come from a point of view of Matthew 7. Let's turn over there real quick. This is how they interpret it. Matthew 7. And in verse 24, Jesus says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. You see, viewing the Beatitudes through the lens of this, we see them as putting Jesus' teachings into practice. Blessed are the poor in spirit. If I somehow put these into my life, if I open my heart, say, God, I want to be this way, then I will be full, I will be whole. Because only when we actually do Jesus' teachings are we ever going to be able to stand. If we think about it, intend, or familiar, we're not going to stand. We're not going to stand. But if we say, I will do this. Now, let's go back. With that understanding in mind, look at the Beatitudes. Matthew 5. Blessed are the poor in spirit. What is that talking about? It's talking about the humble. This is how you would view it from this point of view. The humble. Man, I need God. God opposes the proud. So he starts with humility. Blessed are those who mourn. They'll be comforted. Who are the people that have ever done anything great in life? They're people that are upset. They're upset about poverty. They're upset about disease. They're upset about overcrowdedness. They're upset. So what do? They do something. It is only when you mourn that you ever decide, I will change and put something into practice. So blessed are those who mourn. They look at their life. I don't want this stuff in my life anymore. And they mourn it. Now, they're ready to change. Mike Leatherwood used to always talk about helping people. CR say they got to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And once they do that, now they're ready to change. Same thing here. Blessed are you who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Oh, I hate this, man. You'll get pushed. The word there for meek talks about a horse, the power of a horse that's been harnessed. All right? Blessed are the meek. Meek before who? Before God. Here I am. I'm not coming with you saying this is good, this is bad. You tell me. I am totally here at your will and call. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. I really want to be right in the eyes of God. I want that. I will study. I will talk. I will do whatever it takes. I'm hungering and thirsting. They don't just mosey into it. They are actively seeking it. They want to study. They want to learn. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. This person understands, man, I need forgiveness, so guess what? I'm ready to forgive anybody, anywhere. Forgiveness is not saying that what someone did is good. It's not that at all. Forgiveness is just saying, I let it go. I don't have to have payback. And as far as I'm concerned, my side of the street is swept clean. I'm not going to hold it against it. I hope person changes, but man, blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Fullness. Have you ever seen a happy, resentful person? It's kind of an oxymoron, isn't it? I'm so happy. You know, I'm going to kill you. You know, it's like such a broken life when we're that way. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. It's all about God. It's all about Him. It's all, I just want to see you. I want to be with you. They don't try and throw a little God into their life. Their life is God. And they let Him live it through them. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. People that bring people to God and people to people. They're a peacemaker. In word, in deed, all right? Blessed, and it goes on, those that are persecuted for righteousness. These are the real deal people. They really believe it. Because Paul said, anyone that desires to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. Some people run to Jesus to try and escape hard times. Boy, did you come to the wrong person, okay? Because what He does, He empowers, He indwells, and He sends you right back out into a fallen world where there is hate, there is misery, there is pain, there is brokenness. But you don't have to live that way anymore. You get to be the one with a message. Here is where to find help. God Himself is right here. Listen to what He has to say. Blessed are you when you are persecuted. So, if you look at the Beatitudes this way, then man, this is what you're praying about. This is what you're trying to do because it goes against all human ideas. I mean, we wouldn't come up with this stuff. We have our own idea of what's good and what's bad, right? And a lot of this stuff's on my bad list, according to my view. Be meek, you got to be out of your mind. I'll get to take it. You know, be mourn. I just want to be happy. Be poor in spirit. Come on, you got to think confident about yourself. All this other stuff that we just keep supplanting and we keep going to the real world. Jesus says, this is reality. It is about being connected with God, who is the Almighty, who is the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega. That's what this is about. There's more strength there than anything you could even imagine. So, that's one way. Some people look at this, and it's a true way. But there's another way some people have approached this. Dallas Willard approaches this as, these are the people for whom the kingdom is available. These are the kind of downtrodden. And back in those days, what people thought is, if you're rich, it's a sign of God's approval. If you're in power, it's a sign of God's approval. If you are dominant, it's a sign of God's approval. If you have good health, it's a sign of God's approval. And all the now, while these things are blessings and certainly little gifts, it's no sign of God's approval. Some of the most powerful people were against God. God used them for a while. Boom, they were broken. They're gone in history. Nebuchadnezzar, gone. Caesar, gone. All right, they had a chance. They didn't. Gone. Some of the most wealthy people, some of the most famous people. That's not a sign that God approves. What it is a sign that God gave people certain gifts, but they decide what's good for them and what's bad, and they use those gifts to enhance themselves. Well, doesn't God want me to be famous rather than that, you know, pagan? No. God is not going to enable me coming up with my own idea of what's good and bad in my life. He's not going to enable that. He doesn't want me to do it. He'd much rather me be obscure and faithful than famous and unfaithful. He'd rather me live hand to mouth and be faithful than overflowing in wealth and be faithless. Because he understands that is what life is all about. What he brings is contentment. Without God, you don't have contentment. You don't have that. So, when they look at it that way, this is interpreted in the spirit of Luke 18. Let's go there real quick. Luke 18. in verse 9, Jesus speaking. He says, to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, the tax collector, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So when you look at the Beatitudes through this lens, we're seeing people that were on the margins of society. Jesus looked down and saw the people on the margins of society, which society would have said, ha, they must have done something wrong in their life. Must be sin there, or else they'd be the rich, powerful, everything be together, the dominant ones. And Jesus said, no, no. So here's how you read it with that. The poor in spirit, he saw people that were downtrodden, mourn, people that just destitute, you know, in a lot of pain. The meek, oh, they got run over all the time by the political and the powers. The hunger and thirst for righteousness, those people that tried to do the right thing but ended up getting kicked in the teeth. The merciful, yeah, how'd that go? You showed mercy and look, it came back on you. Other people didn't change. You made yourself vulnerable. You got taken advantage of. The pure in heart, how did that go? You tried to do what you thought God wanted to, and was there any reward in it? No, you got in more trouble. The peacemakers, yeah, the people that try and pull things together and get accused of not having the guts to take a side. Those persecuted because of righteousness, people that get insulted because of him, those people that, man, I'm going to make a stand. I'm going to have conviction. And they suffered the results of that. So, Jesus says, you know what? The kingdom is for all these. You may have been taught that, man, you're not good enough to be here. See, obviously, God didn't approve of you. Look what's happened to your life. And you may be feeling that, but I tell you what, the kingdom is for you. That is why I'm here. You don't have to bring anything special. You just come heart first. I don't care where you've been. I don't care what's happened. I don't care. Nothing disqualifies you from my kingdom. Jesus says, blessed are you. The promise of fullness and wholeness is yours. God's approval is not dependent upon what's going on in your life. God's approval and acceptance is your heart. He loves you. Come the way you are. Any wonder why they crucified him? The religious teachers, we'll talk about that at a later point. So, which is the best way to read the Beatitudes? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. Read them, because God's going to get you where you are. God's going to teach you wholeness and fullness where you are. God's going to give you illumination where you are, because Jesus came for one reason only, you. He wanted you to be full and whole and blessed, but not to have just a great life here. He's preparing you for the new heavens and the new earth. He's teaching you how to love people, how to care about more than yourself. And he puts you with other sinners to do that. I cannot love like God unless I'm around people that sometimes aren't worth love, right? Just like me. You cannot love like God unless I'm around your life. Because I'll give you all the reasons why you shouldn't love, right? And all of a sudden, you've got to take on a new reality. You've got to be plugged in to a new way of looking at things. God himself. So what do we do? Let's finish in 1 Corinthians 2. What do you do with all this? You approach him as the ultimate authority in all areas of life. Jesus is competent. And I want you to stop and hang with me on this, all right? I'm sure we would all agree. Okay, competent, yeah, I mean, he's God. He's the Son of God. No, I'm talking about he is trustworthy to allow him to live your life through you. That's what we're talking about, competence. We're talking about giving ourselves totally to him, living the life he set before us. Why? He is competent. Our vision of reality is narrow. We can't see everything. He can. I don't have to understand everything he said. I just got to open my heart to it, apply it, and all of a sudden now I start seeing it. Here I am, you know, years later, and you know what? I like broccoli now. I like spinach now. I like squash now. But I am so thankful that my parents didn't decide to let my reality define my health. Or I would not be here now. I could not do anything now. I would be so vitamin deficient. I'm so glad they said, Sheridan, it's okay that things taste good, but buddy, son, we love you. You are going to do this. This is reality. So that's what Jesus is doing for now. You want a wholeness? You want fullness? You can come up with your own idea of that, but guess what? God's not going to enable that because it's your idea. And you're fallen. And you'll just perpetuate the problem. And you'll go off and you'll be in your own little reality. This is good for me. This is what's happening to the other people. It's good for me. Isn't that kind of the seed of racism? Oh, let's just have all whites. Let's just have all blacks. See, it's good for me. What does that do? Pick up the newspaper and see what happens. 1 Corinthians 2. Close out here. Second half of verse 10. The Spirit searches all things, even the deep things of God. For who among men knows the thoughts of a man except the man's spirit within him? In the same way, no one knows the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. We have not received the Spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we may understand what God has freely given us. This is what we speak, not in words taught us by human wisdom, but in words taught by the Spirit, expressing spiritual truths in spiritual words. The man without the Spirit does not accept things that come from the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. That's real life. And he cannot understand them because they are spiritually discerned. The spiritual man makes judgments about all things, but he himself is not subject to any man's judgment. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. I have the reality of Christ because I've opened my heart to him. You have the reality of Christ, that the reality he sees because you open your heart and commit yourself to him. Other people don't understand it. It doesn't make sense. And maybe some of us, if we're struggling spiritually, it doesn't make sense to us. Maybe we lost it, and we need to get it back. But one thing's for sure is this Jewish rabbi came into this creation and said, wholeness and fullness is here. It begins with me. And I will teach you. Will you learn? Here's my challenge. What is something that you need to change in your life? That God has put on your heart, and you know you need to change. But you just haven't done it. Here's the challenge. Let the church be the church. Go talk to another disciple and say, this is what's going on in my life. I've said I'll change it. I'm not changing it. Go to someone you trust, someone who is competent, and do that. Too often, the basis of some of our relationships is we go for confirmation, which that's okay. Confirming that, hey, we're growing and that, you know, we're at a good place. Amen, do that. But if that's the only thing we do, we never grow. You know, if I wanted to become some athlete, I'd get a personal trainer. And if I go up to him and say, you know what, I would like for you to teach me to bench press 200 pounds. And he looks at me and goes, okay, Sheridan, what's your max bench press? 200 pounds. He said, get out of here. I'm not going to help you do something you're already doing. What good is that? I want to help you do something you cannot do. You have not yet done. I want to take you into a realm that is yet to be. That is growth. Growth is not staying the same and just confirming it. Growth is going where you haven't gone yet. And who will you talk to? See, that's that one area in our lives. I don't want to talk to anyone. Find someone that is competent, that loves the Lord. That's what the church is here for. And say, here's what's going on. I need to change. Help me, please. What is it in the Word of God? What is it in my prayer life? I'm open. Do that, because that is growth. And you know what the result will be? Fullness, wholeness, blessed. What Jesus has intended. That is life in the kingdom. Let's all stand, and I will say a closing prayer, and then singers, why don't you guys come and close us out here with a song.